Da haben wir einen Film von Andreas Jonsen, Ralf Christensen und Henrik Moltke. Das sind Leute aus Dänemark, die einen Film gemacht haben namens Good Copy, Bad Copy. Und den werden wir jetzt als Film spielen. Und der ist, genau, der ist in englischer Sprache. Und an einigen Stellen wird auch Schwedisch oder Brasilianisch oder Russisch gesprochen. Und an den Stellen werden wir den englischen Text nachsprechen, so dass das Gesamt auf Englisch nachvollziehbar sein sollte. Good Copy, Bad Copy aus dem Jahre 2007. Ein Film über Copyright. Und viel Spaß in der kommenden knappen Stunde.
Mr. Chairman, I want to tell you a little story of a local guy done good. By day, he's a biomedical engineer in Pittsburgh. At night, he DJs under the name Girl Talk. His shtick, as the Chicago Tribune wrote about him, is, quote, based on the notion that some sampling of copyrighted material, especially when manipulated and recontextualized into a new art form, is legit and deserves to be heard. In one example, Mr. Chairman, he blended Elton John, Notorious B.I.G., and Destiny's Child all in the span of 30 seconds.
That sounds good. I'd say for the past like 4 or 5 months, every single weekend I've done like a Friday, Saturday show. There's a lot of cities and there's just a million colleges you can play at. I think it should slow down. I'm getting a little exhausted. I just like to sit down and work on music. This is my spot. So this is my new album. It's called Night Ripper. On the inside of the album, I kind of thanked all of the artists that I sample. That was part of the fun of the album, for people to kind of hunt down how many samples they could recognize, and looking through here and even recognizing artist names that they don't recognize on there and trying to pinpoint it. I feel like I did my own work, but I absolutely, you know, owe them all a little credit because they're blatantly on the album, and I have a lot of respect for all of their music. You know, the album stirred up a lot of controversy this year. I think people are realizing that I'm not hurting anyone and I'm helping them, and kind of why go after someone who's just, you know, clearly they're just trying to make music. Suggest a little hot sauce. Yeah, at least you get a little dose of Pittsburgh culture in here. Everyone is bombarded with media enough that I think we've almost been forced to kind of take it upon ourselves and use it as an art form. It's like anything, you know. If people were passing out paints on the street for free every day, I'm sure there'd be a lot more painters out there right now, you know what I mean? That's exactly what's happening right now with kind of remix culture on the internet. And, you know, I don't know, I think the current laws are in a lot of ways just prohibiting, you know, the flow of culture and music.
Hello. My name is Dr. Lawrence Ferrara. I have been for about 15 years very actively involved in intellectual property, and very specifically about music copyright. The key word in master recording claims is a technique called sampling.
If you are a hip-hop producer and you're taking a beat from a recorded piece of music and playing with it in the studio and making it into something else, you're always risking being hauled into court and being sued for copyright infringement.
One of the most important cases in the United States is called Bridgeport v. Dimension Films.
Yes, Bridgeport Music is the owner of copyrights, yes. I used to play the accordion. We have the archive of rap. Mostly rap. They all are mostly sampled, yes. It's just me, myself, and I.
me, myself, and I. Yes, that was my first experience of a sample. And then we started to understand that we may have to listen to some records or some CDs.
Now, the original George Clinton funkadelic song was Get Off Your Ass and Jam.
I think I'm going to play it to you.
In other words, get up and get up and get up and dance. A great song.
If you're familiar with Get Off Your Ass and Jam, it's, you know, it's the opening riff to the song, so it's obviously, it's that thing that cues you to what's coming next.
So essentially what we just heard is this. Three notes on the guitar.
2 seconds was taken from Get Off Your Ass. It's, by the way, it's wonderful to hear learned judges having to deal with song titles like Get Off Your Ass and Jam.
Dr. Dre and other members of NWA do a song called 100 Miles and Running. 100 miles and running. MC Ren, I hold the gun and you want me to kill a motherfucker and it's done. It's
system stereotype to kill and destruct. It's one of the main reasons I don't give a fuck. Basically what they did was they took a portion of the intro guitar riff, used it as a loop, but they stretched it out so that it fit the tempo. So it sounds more like this. Right. If you listen here in the background, it almost sounds like a siren. And they again, they use that in and out throughout the song.
It's very difficult to hear that it's been highly manipulated and the context is so different.
The phrase de minimis comes from the Latin maxim de minimis non curat lex, which roughly means the law isn't concerned with insignificant offenses. So it was the ideal case to find de minimis use protecting NWA.
Now, many, but it is not. The court decided it is illegal to take anything from a recording. And it's they also say it's not creative.
Good luck, brothers.
It was a wake-up call for the industry as well, because they thought, oh, we are getting away with it, and they didn't.
And they had a rather stark and severe one-sentence line. It said, if you sample, you license. Period.
But this is the way hip-hop works. This is the way rap music works. So many people have said that that is the death knell for hip-hop music.
It definitely changed from this to this. And of course, we were the topic of the year with all the majors, including publishers and record labels. Some people like us and some people don't. That's always the case when you have a lawsuit.
Is George Clinton satisfied with the way you administered his song catalog?
You would have to ask himself, not me.
All of this brings us to the, perhaps the most interesting issue about intellectual property and about copyright. And that is, who really owns what? And what is the purpose of copyright?
Three coming to you. I'm Siva Vaidyanathan. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Culture and Communication at New York University. The best example of the ways in which copyright law undermines everybody's interest is the Grey album, which was produced by a DJ known as DJ Danger Mouse. Danger Mouse was inspired by Jay-Z's Black album and the Beatles' White album, and so he took the vocal track from Jay-Z and samples of the musical bed from the White Album and mix them together in a brilliant way.
Oh, yeah.
He released some discs to a few friends who immediately posted the songs on the internet. Within weeks, thousands of people had copies of it.
Just came to me one day, just kind of like as an art project I was going to try and challenge myself to do. I had always kind of mixed up different genres of music and everything, and I just hadn't done this particular thing yet, but it just kind of came to me. And I thought, well, maybe I can do it, and took a few weeks and just did it. And then, you know, after it took off from there, it just kind of got out of hand. It got kind of crazy.
Everything he did with that was basically illegal. The Beatles publishing company would not allow this to happen. He agreed not to do any more distribution, but it was far too late. Everybody had it. It was an instant classic.
It's culturally as well, you know, you have a very white thing and a very black thing, apparently, and then, you know, it could make beautiful music together. It's very corny, very cheesy, you know, and the whole calling it the Grey Album, all that stuff, you know, but that's what I'm trying to do, is change people's perceptions about music and what you can do and things like that. So hopefully I'm getting there, you know, but it's a start, you know.
Ultimately, it was probably the most successful album of 2005. If it had actually been sold, it might have been the biggest hit of the year. Danger Mouse never made a dime. Nobody who copied or distributed the music ever made a dime. Beatles didn't make a dime. Jay-Z didn't make a dime. The Beatles lawyers must have made some money, but nobody else did.
I'm one of the few people I think has a ton of fans that don't have any product of mine. You know what I mean? So, and that's great, because it's not like it's dependent on that.
This is the typical setup I use live, where, you know, just hours and hours of cutting, trial and error, and then, you know, once I'm actually playing stuff I've already worked out, these are kind of songs in my head where I already, you know, what, you know, I just know I have to mute and unmute on the right time, and I just, you know, have to kind of go. So this is kind of just, you know, simple drum beat that's really familiar. I'm going to put a cameo drum beat over top of this. So there's two drum beats playing right now. Beat A. Beat B, you could put them together, and then I sampled AC/DC, Money Talks, and you could just lay that over top. And then I could put on vocals over top of that TI. Whenever I record for an album, I kind of do a live rendition of that, record out of here, and then I take it back in here and kind of edit it piece by piece together. I don't know about anyone else. I'd be happy paying royalties for every sample on the record, but that's not what it'd be. You know, to actually license a sample would cost millions of dollars, which I can't afford. Sampling would be this form of music that you just can't make music off of because you have to give all your money away. That would still be cool. It'd still be this, you know, new way to make music. You know, it's, I think that'd be wonderful. But in a theoretical world, if I could clear every sample on there, and I had $1 million or $1 billion or whatever to do it, it would still take me probably, you know, 50 years to go through, you know, the legal hassle figuring all of that out. And that's just absurd.
Okay.
Just look at the camera then?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm Dan Glickman. I'm the chairman and CEO of the Motion Picture Association of America. We represent the six largest motion picture companies. I would not say I'm the boss of Hollywood. And in fact, if I said that, I probably wouldn't have the job very long. I happen to represent them in Washington and countries worldwide as we try to deal with the issues that we're concerned about. In the U.S. Constitution, there is, which was adopted over 200 years ago, there's only one substantive area of law that was included in the Constitution, and that was protecting creators' rights, because the founding fathers in the U.S. said that would be more determinative of about anything else as to how successful a country you have, is that if you had people, imaginative, curious, thinking people who would want to build things, make things, and the theory was they wouldn't do it unless you somehow protected that right. Well, piracy is the unauthorized a taking or theft of that intellectual property without compensation.
The system is very simple. Here in Gorbuska, you have around 2,000 shops. About 30 of those sell original products. Watch out, will you? I'm being interviewed. Don't you see the mic? Oh, fuck. Sorry for swearing. We have to be discreet with the camera. There are guards patrolling. The European is paid to film the opening night of the cinema. He transfers the first part of the recording to Russia via internet. If the pirates here are happy with the price and the recording, they transfer the money and receive the second part. Our economy is 30 years behind Europe. To us, this is perfectly normal. The ironic part is that most of the pirated copies are sold from the shops that are controlled by the police.
Piracy used to be largely the street variety of piracy, you know, the DVDs or the CDs. But now more and more is internet piracy, which is much more complicated than street piracy.
A facilitator is a server that acts as a directory or search engine and coordinates the mass downloading and exchange of pirated content between downloaders.
The losses to our companies are, we figure, about $6 billion a year.
We recognize and we know that we will never stop piracy. Never. We just have to try to make it as difficult and as tedious as possible. And we have to let people know there are consequences if they're caught.
I got a phone call from someone that there was a lot of policemen there. And I asked, what the fuck? So I went there with a cab, and the police actually stopped the cab with lights flashing and all.
And they wanted to know who I was, and I kept asking, who are you? And they, who are you? And after a bit of who are you-ing, they finally, yeah, we're police officers, we're here on investigations.
They first asked some stuff about the BitTorrent protocol. Then they asked some stuff about the Pirate Bay and my involvement in it.
The obvious goal of the police was to get the Pirate Bay offline and get the internet supplier PRQ offline.
Well, we certainly wanted the local authorities to know that a replication of copyrighted material was happening and being distributed worldwide. You've got to go after the folks if they're actually breaking the law and use local law enforcement authorities to do it. That was the decision they made, but we talked to them.
They think that U.S. jurisdiction stretches around the world. It's illegal according to U.S. law, but it's not illegal according to Swedish law.
Go fuck yourself.
And the users really appreciated that we talk back to them, tell them that you don't decide over the internet. We, the users, do.
Damn it. Now I'm so scared I pissed my pants. Where should I send the invoice for cleaning them?
Personally, I see the Pirate Bay as a sort of organized civil disobedience to simply force a change of the current copyright laws and the general copyright climate.
There is a growing movement, particularly among younger people in Europe and in the United States, about collective is free, free is right. Sharing of information should be unrestricted, you know, and that comes into conflict with copyright, so be it.
After 3 days, the servers were back up and most of the backups restored. Now, the site is virtually impossible to take down.
It was quite an eye-opener for them that there's such a large base of popular support for file sharing and the general copyright issues.
I think in Sweden especially, it's become kind of a cause célèbre. There was even a political party that was created because of this.
Vad det handlade om var att svenska regeringen hade lagt till plats för påtryckningar från USA:s
We had it from the U.S. Entertainment Ministry, violating Swedish citizen rights and not giving a damn about Swedish law. That upset people. I set up the website and dragged the address into a chat channel. The next day, it had 1 million hits. Swedish media started calling, then the European. January 4th, my picture was in a Pakistani newspaper. I said to myself, what is this? Stop, I want to get off. The Pirate Party protecting your privacy rights. Go on, take it and have a read. File sharing has pros and cons. The copyright infringement is a drawback. But if you want to fully get rid of copyright infringement, the consequences are unacceptable. There is a proposition on data storage. It's new to the EU, and all internet traffic is to be retained for up to 10 years. All emails you send and all your phone calls will be stored. That's right, every day, private communication. I think you should read it. An old revenue scheme for the internet and entertainment industry is up against fundamental rights, such as privacy of correspondents, protection of whistleblowers, and freedom of press. This is a disturbing trend because they do not understand what is going on. They think it is about one profession's right to get paid for its work, but is not the issue. What is on your iPod? If you look at the advantages of file sharing, every citizen gets all knowledge and culture of the world at his fingertips. Each citizen is enriched in a way not seen since the advent of public libraries 150 years ago.
There's only you in my life, the only thing.
What does this music video with Bush and Blair illustrate?
It illustrates the extraordinary potential that digital technology has given not just movie studios, not just television stations, but anybody who has a $1,500 computer can begin to use sounds and images from the culture around us to say things about politics or culture in ways that connect directly to people.
So tell me about how Creative Commons works, because that is something very different from the copyrights as we know them.
That's right. Creative Commons is giving artists a simple tool so they can mark their creativity with the freedoms they intended to carry. Now, it's important that it's artists that are doing this. Nobody's taking any rights away from anybody. And it's important that they're making a choice about which freedoms they want to associate with their creativity.
Can the artist get any payment through Creative Commons?
Well, Creative Commons has a suite of licenses. And so, for example, if you license your content under a non-commercial license, what that's saying is you're free to use this for non-commercial purposes, but if you want to use it for commercial purposes, come back and talk to me. Unlike some people in this movement, I fundamentally believe in copyright and its need in the digital age. The only problem is that it's become so expansive and so powerful that it can begin to actually inhibit creativity. Okay. Is all the film magnetic tape or is some of it?
No, it's a size 16 millimeters.
Film, huh?
Yeah.
It's nitrate based film?
No, I don't think so. That would be dangerous, I think.
Yeah. I write books for a living. I know that when my books are assigned in a college, kids take my words and do all sorts of junk with them. But I don't want to file a federal lawsuit about it. I don't want to go into a court and tell them, stop that person from using my work. We all understand in the context of text that you put the text out there, copyright protects you from somebody competing with you and selling the original book, but it ought to be free for people to use and reuse as they want. Those same norms have got to begin to be part of film and music and graphics as well. Imagine you could take, when you were married, go back and see all the news stories that were happening on that time, and maybe on an anniversary, be able to take those and mix them into a story about your life that you would give to your spouse, right? This is the kind of creative opportunity digital technologies give us quite cheaply, but the law makes it practically impossible as the law is structured right now. Now, what we should do is just update the law to make the law make sense of these technologies, and there are many creative ways to do that to ensure that artists continue to get paid. But the thing to realize is these things sitting on the shelves right now, having content from the 1950s and 1960s and 1970s, nobody's being paid for them now anyway. So if they begin to be used in a way that kids can use them in the school and nobody gets paid, then nobody's worse off. But even if you were to, put a simple system to assure compensation for the use of this, you can actually increase the compensation to the artist who made this work in a way that otherwise they wouldn't be getting anyway.
If you go to Africa, the Nigerian cinema is nowadays the largest movie makers of the world. The United States produces 611 films per year. India produces around 900. Nigeria produces 1,200 movies. And the interesting thing is, all that happened without Nigeria having a copyright law.
Nigerians are what? In excess of about 120, 130, some say 150 million people. One in five black people in the world is a Nigerian. One in four Africans is a Nigerian. So there's quite a lot of people here. And for a large group like that not to have any kind of, connection with any kind of audiovisual expression that is peculiar to them, there's a gap in the market. Everybody's looking to Hollywood. They're selling a lot of sex, a lot of violence and all that. We don't make movies like that. We make movies that have genuine human stories, that have real family values, respect, respect for elders, love for one another. Accommodation, a whole lot of stuff, We don't celebrate killing and all that. We don't do that. We do make movies that make a difference.
As a Christian, I have always believed in sharing.
Thank you very much.
My right hand of fellowship.
We can't go to the LA film schools, but we can tell our stories with our own pictures. Oh, they look atrocious, the acting is horrible and all that, but it's at least it's piecing together the stories. So, the first shot we have. The American market, they definitely have set the pace for most people. They are probably the most advanced in the world. That's accepted. But my people say you can't be taller than me and shorter than me at the same time. You got to decide what you want to do. So we'll give them, best in the world. Yes, you take that. You take the high end of the market. You take the biggest things in the market. But there's a lot of room to play somewhere else. And we occupy that space quite gladly. The economics of making movies on celluloid or 35 millimeters would never work in Africa, would never work in Nigeria. We don't have the structures to support that. We don't have anything to support that. Nigeria has been the first country in the world to accept and, develop digital video as an origination format for feature films. Nigeria was the first country in the world to make direct-to-video as the first line of release. The Americans are coming to that now. DVD has essentially saved the studios in Hollywood. But Nigeria went there first.
When a film is released, everybody only looks at the executive producer, the person who puts down the money to make the film and reproduce. But the copyright aspect has not really been explored. But we are now trying to give effect or give meaning to that aspect. We have been able to start to create that culture of respect for copyright.
This market is Alaba International Market. Nationwide, everybody know about the market. We also have all these opportunities for talking about. The producers are inside the market, so you cannot go and parade their work. The association, they will arrest you, so we don't parade Nigerian movies. You can parade foreign movies or those things. Foreign is okay. Since the producer is not here, you can go outside and produce and come and sell at your own price. So that goes.
Piracy has an interesting connotation in Nigeria because see, people tend to think that, oh well, it's criminals who want to do this. People would rather buy the counterfeit copy and cheap copy and all that. The counterfeit copy in Nigeria costs just as much as the genuine copy, so it's not about the money. You know, whether you're buying the counterfeit or you're buying the genuine one, it's going to cost you the same. And that piracy, again, doesn't occur until the genuine copy becomes available. So if we make the effort to put the genuine copy at the time of release in front of the public, and they have all bought genuine copies, I wonder who then will be buying the pirate copies. We're also trying to provide solutions to that situation that creates the piracy, rather than, you know, just pursue people who are counterfeiting things all over the place, you know.
If I convict a pirate, the pirate will not put money in my pocket. Rather, he will still continue to spend my money that I pay to government as tax. Government will have to feed him. Government will have to clothe him and take care of him even while in prison. We don't want to look at things from the negative angle. We want to approach it from the positive angle. And as we go along, we remove all forms of negativity. Copyright is not about stopping people from using your work, but getting them to use your work legally and giving you money for what they have done with your work.
God said to Abraham, lift up your eyes. Huh? Said, lift up your eyes and look. Everything you see, I have given you. I'm saying to you today, just lift up your eyes a little. The realities of this economy have required that we should distill our own unique and peculiar method of creating motion pictures. And that we have done.
Slap your lap 3 times.
There's a huge chunk of that American market that's right in our ballpark. I'm sure you know that. That's the African American market. Now people say, oh well, fine, you never connect with them. But the bottom line is this: we have more things in common than even the African Americans themselves even realize. There are genes in our bodies that respond to each other, that respond to our stories, our songs, our music. That community essentially is a market waiting to connect with this Nigerian community. And of course, they can try to shut us out, but that's not possible anymore these days anyway. Because, you know, when it was up to a few people to decide what was to show in the cinemas in the US and all that, yes, they could keep you out. But now everybody's up on the internet. You can access anything you want, anywhere you want, you know, from anywhere in the world. So if I've got product that's valid for guys abroad, I can reach them from here.
Society is the biggest competitor for Hollywood, for the music industry, for the publishing industry. So you have this new competitor that is everyone else. So the law has been consistently changed in the past, say, 12 years in order to protect certain very specific interests, especially for the North American cultural industry, in order to prevent society from becoming the producer of culture in itself and for itself.
My name is Olivier. I'm the head of marketing at BP Records. We're the largest reggae label in the world. This is sort of the heart of the operation. Music starts in Jamaica, comes here, and gets spread throughout the world from this warehouse. First album that pretty much everybody knows, it sold 6 million units. That was with less airplay and less marketing than this album, and this one sold half of that. So clearly there's a crisis going on. It's significant damage done to the value of music by Napster and all the services, where everybody feels that fuck, what would I pay? And it's true, you can't compete with free. How do you want to compete with something that's free? You can't. We can't.
Okay, you need copyright as an incentive to people to create.
First of all, we go to the internet service providers and say, look, one of the most important things you have in your business model is music. When you go and look for new subscribers, you say how important music is. Now, if you believe music's important to you, then respect music and cooperate with those who are producing the new music that you need for your commercial business model. And what we need most protection against is the stealing of our music. Oh, in fact, it's just too hot here. It's just like a sauna. Let me just cool down.
The figures show that $7 billion in value has been lost in the record industry in the last 6 years. And while I don't have the exact number, thousands of jobs have been cut.
Digital downloading killed the music business. Recently, major record stores have closed, such as Tower Records, which is really sad.
There is a tremendous turf battles going on. Do you understand the word turf wars? I think that there is no getting away that if the record companies continue to try and stick to their old business model in the new technology, it will not work, and it will, all that will happen is that it will slow down the development. If they close down all the peer-to-peer technologies within Europe, there will be one in China or in Russia, like all of mp3.com, or in Kazakhstan. And if you close all those down, they'll be on Pacific Islands. And if you close all those down, they'll be on a boat.
We would like to have penalties which any reasonable person would see as a deterrent, so that if you have a first offender in piracy, you have to have a proportionate penalty. If you have people who are major offenders and repeat offenders, you have to have something which will operate as a real deterrent. And in the world of crime, that involves prison sentences.
They've started suing people, which is not a very great thing to do. Suing your fans, and by and large, the people who do the uploading, who are the people they sue, are the biggest fans. They're the real music fanatics.
I think everyone knows the music industry is evil. And that's why when you use LimeWire or eMule, you really don't feel bad about it, because this is not industry you want to give money to.
I think there's no indication that consumers mind paying artists. I think there's plenty of indication that consumers aren't so happy to pay corporations.
We need to find a way to make people want to support the musicians and the record label that helped make this happen. And to make this happen, they have to feel good about it.
I love going to the record store, buying a CD, and owning this product, because that's what I did when I bought the first record that I love. That's what I did when I bought Nirvana, Nevermind. I went to the record store with my parents, hunting it down, break it open, read the liner notes, listen to the album. That is an awesome experience, and you know, a lot of kids don't get to experience that, and I question, if you don't have that experience growing up, if you don't have this kind of nostalgic connection and this love for actually, you know, consuming music in that way, you know, is it going to be important?
The perception of the value of music by the consumer has declined, and I think what we need to do as record labels, and anybody that wants to work in music, is really to rethink, you know, how we want to sell music. You know, is the model that, you know, it's all you can eat, you know, and you just pay $10 per month with no limitation on your consumption, but you don't own, so that may be one way. You know, another way, you know, the French government actually is working on is to get, you know, a percentage of the revenue from the telecom operators, cell phone, you know, ISPs, and allocate a certain amount to be paid to copyright owners, and then say, okay, you know, that's going to be the compensation. You'll be transparent to the consumer. You just be added to your phone bill, you won't see it, and, you know, any music you want, just go ahead, consume it.
The blanket license, the global license, is going to come. If you have 600 million people worldwide paying $50 a year to access and do whatever they like with all the music that's available, you get the current size of the retail, of the record business, over the counter. Why don't they go for it? They don't go for it, I think, initially because they built up their business, the major labels and the major publishers have built up their business around controlling what we can call the OECD market. you know, the rich world market, and they ring-fenced it. And the rest of the world is full of what they call pirates.
You know, I really don't know if somewhere down the line, eventually, everyone's just going to be downloading for free or whatnot. You know, I personally enjoy downloading music. I think it's great. I try to buy records when I can. And it's really convenient. A lot of times I own records, and I can't find them. My records are scattered over like 5 households right now. So I'll have to just go on the internet and download something that use it in a song, just because I don't want to go through the hassle of going and, you know, try to find it.
I think what will not change is the need to market. This, nobody's heard about them. This is probably, you know, millions of dollars in marketing. It's close to zero. You can't just take a product, dump it, you know, on the internet, and, you know, it's a big myth. The internet is leveling the playing field. What it's doing is that, you know, the big titles, the way we used to market, has changed. Maybe you don't have to own it, but maybe you need to at least listen to it. And whatever consumption, stream, dual delivery, you know, download, mobile, you know, whatever it might be, it doesn't matter.
North of Brazil, you have, like, for instance, the Tecnobrega movement, which is a very interesting movement. Tecnobrega means the mix between techno, especially like sort of electronic beats from the 80s, and brega means kitsch or cheesy, so it means techno cheesy. Amazing stuff. It's excellent. I love it, and it's really great.
Este homem muito usado na mão do Senhor nosso Deus está orando por você e sua família.
Vamos lá? Eu sou produtor musical.
I'm a music producer. I make remixes of Tecnobrega in my studio on the top floor. This is my wife, this is my mother, Catarina. And here's my father is working. He's making a shelf for my studio.
DJ Beto Metralha, Cyber DJ.
First I listen to a song on the radio. Then I try to find the song in the internet and download it from a file sharing service. Listen to it on the computer to see if it's suitable for remixing. Tecnobrega derived from Brega Calypso, which comes from Belém do Pará. In Tecnobrega, you remove the acoustic instruments. It's totally electronic. So I'm a producer, but not a musician. We can't use the bass of this song because it's another style of music.
De estilo da música. O nosso é tum, 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 tá entendendo? É outro baixo.
Ours is different. We need to create another bass line, but we need to find it yet.
Like a music producer that has like a recording studio, probably a very small one, but with good equipment. So they invite the artists to these studios and they make the CDs. And what they do is that they deliver it to the street vendors so that the street vendors can replicate them. So the only people making a profit
out of the CD sales are the street vendors. The musicians don't expect any money whatsoever from releasing the CDs.
My nickname is Spock from the downtown market. I do the T and the C for Cyclone and the S for Superpop. Am I fine? Oh yeah, you're gorgeous. Here you can get all the songs you want compiled on CDs. But you can buy on MP3 CD with 150 to 200 songs, just in one CD. 115 songs. Every morning we sell about 300 of these. It sells a lot when it's well compiled with Techno Brega. See, now this guy wants it.
Pensando em você, ligo pro celular, não quer me atender. Eu sinto vazio no peito.
I go to Tupinamba often because the girls are quite hot. Patty Pancincia is so hot. Agatha is hot too. The aparelgam
is a very important element of the culture of the techno drag. So what happens is that the different sound systems compete among themselves about who has the most cutting-edge updated equipment. They already realize that CDs is not a good business model anymore. CDs are merely an advertisement. They organize the parties in the weekend, and then you have like 5,000 people going to your parties. And when they do that, then you make money.
Fantástico Prêmio Terra Tupinambá.
DJ Dinho from Tupinambá, the number one sound system in Brazil. The music is made to promote the artists. The artists don't use the music to sell millions of copies. It's to give the artist attention and to get shows. Techno Brega is first played at the sound system parties, the biggest outlet for our music. They start to play the song and then it becomes popular. DJ Dinho is gonna play for you. And this song is gonna be a hit. Oh Dinho, I'm here in front of you and not looking good. Are you recording? Dinho, I look horrible. I can't believe it. She thinks it's for my TV program. The woman didn't think she was well dressed. Come to Tupinambá. And let's dance like that. Now I'm doing a remix of the song Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. I'm tuning it into Techno Brega. The story of Gnarls Barkley, there are two guys, Danger Mouse and CeeLo. Danger Mouse became very famous. He mixed the White Album by the Beatles with the Black Album by the rapper Jay-Z. He did it without permission and without caring about copyright. He's very lucky and also very lucky not to be in jail.
preso também, né?
Mas depois disso, os caras
juntaram. After this, he was hired to produce Gorillaz. Do you know Gorillaz? Set Myself Together?
Gorillaz?
Is that Gorillaz? Yeah, you know it. If it's there.
Não tem artista, né?
There's no lead singer, right? Only cartoons, yeah, only cartoons. The majority of songs here are copies of other songs. They are easier to adapt to Tecnobrega and Melody. They already made a copy of Guns N' Roses and U2.
U2,
Even Pink Floyd.
Dire Straits.
Dire Straits.
Calm.
Take it easy.
Essa versão.
This copy was the biggest hit of all time.
Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury, Queen, right? All these bands.
Essas bandas aí, eles.
Agora a questão da.
About the copyright, the artists don't worry about it.
O artista não se preocupa com isso. Ele não quer ganhar dinheiro.
They don't want to make money through copyright. But from making shows and being successful in that way.
Ja, wir haben uns jetzt schon gerade gefragt, wie das nun enden wird. Werden wir noch was aus Berlin hören, aber jetzt ist wirklich das Stream weg, Dirk, hä?
Ja, der Stream ist weg. Ja. Dann müssen wir jetzt noch die.
Wir müssen gar nicht. Wir können ja noch unsere nächste Sendung ankündigen. Das ist am nächsten Donnerstag. Wir können unsere nachfolgende Sendung ankündigen. Die ist auch gleich am Start. Warte, können wir noch hier weg?
Genau, also unsere nächste
Runde. Das war jetzt übrigens hier, das habe ich doch schon längst angekündigt. Das war jetzt
die ist nicht nächsten Donnerstag,
nicht?
Die ist am 2.8.
Ach, übernächsten Donnerstag.
Das ist übernächsten Donnerstag. Ja. Und wer von Micro FM im Prinzip noch mehr hören möchte, die haben auch eine Internetseite unter
microfm.org. Das Org haben sie vorher nicht verraten, aber das findet man ja auch leicht raus.
Die Internetseite ist eigentlich micro.fm.
Echt? Ach so.
Ja.
Dann muss ich selbst nochmal nachschauen, du.
Nee. Ihr werdet es finden, Micro FM müsst ihr dann bei Tante Google eingeben oder so.